with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Not that most nights aren't, but I've got a sense that tonight is going to be busy and vigorous. Can you imagine anything worse for the Republican Party than having a screaming birther in the gallery earlier today during the great big important reading of our great Constitution? That's the way birthers, baggers, deathers, tenthers, and various and sundry booger eaters refer to it now, our great Constitution. Yeah, you got to put that adjective in front of it so you can sound all, you know, Palin-esque and stuff, right? Yeah. Oh, we're going to be busy. We're going to be busy. But I ended the program last night with a few remarks about our dear departed friend, colleague, comrade, sister, hero, Judy Bonds. And for those of you who had never gotten the opportunity to hear Judy speak, I wanted to start the evening with just a little bit of something from her that would give you an idea of why she was such an inspiration. And this in particular is a special piece of audio because it's the last appearance that Judy ever did. It's June 2010. It's in California. She had traveled across the country as she had so often crisscrossed both the nation and other parts of the world to deliver her human rights message. And as you'll hear, it is a human rights message. This was the last time she spoke publicly. She didn't know it at the time, but she was dying. But you would never know it to hear her. So we'll just take 3 or 4 minutes and give a listen to Judy.
And I'm going to tell you guys something. We're at a great crossroads in our lives right now. And it's do or die. And we need to choose life for human beings. Heck yeah, save the baby humans. What's wrong with us, save the baby humans? And I'm still speaking to the youth. I'm going to tell you something. Our children are going to know whether or not we acted. And your children will know whether or not you acted. And I'm going to tell you something else, too. God's going to judge us for what we did to His creation, because He told us that. And we partied on our children's future. Yeah, man, we partied on our children's future, and now it's time to pay the band. Somebody's got to pay this band. And I reckon, and that's an old hillbilly saying, I reckon it's going to be our kids that's going to pay for this, the price for this band. You know what? We told our children to clean up their rooms. But look at the mess we're leaving them to clean up. Look at the mess we're leaving them to clean up. How dare us? Shame on us. Shame on us. Hey, kids, I'm going to tell you something. Look at your mom and your dad and your grandparents and look at them and say, hey, now look at here, mom and dad. Help me clean up this mess you done made. Help me clean this mess up. You know, save something for me. Save me some clean air and some clean water. I would like to have a little bit of energy, too. So it's time. It's time for wind, and it's time for solar, and it's time for it right now. I'm going to tell you something right now. We're in the worst times of our life. You can look around and you can pretend everything's fine, but it's not fine. It's not fine at all. We can't drill or blast our way out of this mess. The only thing that's going to get us out of this mess is you. You. You're the only person that's going to get us out of this mess. What we have to figure out is this won't be easy. It's going to be hard. It will be hard. It will be hard. So what we have to do is look at ourselves and say, how tough are you? How tough are you, baby? Are you tough? Are you tough enough to get the job done? If a little old gray-haired hillbilly woman can do it, you can do it. I'm going to tell you something. It's time to get out of your seats and into the streets. It's time to stop shutting up when you have people saying nothing's wrong. Oh, we got 100 years of coal left. They're lying. I'm telling you, they're lying to you. What we're looking at right now is 8 years. 8 years of deregulation of the coal and the oil industry and of Wall Street. And that's why we're on the brink of financial ruin right now. These companies must be regulated. They have to be regulated. But I'm going to tell you something. The only person I see doing anything about these problems are tree huggers. Or you guys. You're the only people I see doing anything about this problem. And I'm going to tell you something. And I'm closing. I've only got a few more minutes. But I really have become frustrated recently with denials. And I call them the queens of denial. Those are the people you see out there saying, oh, there's nothing going on. Everything's fine. There ain't nothing going on. Well, these queens of denial, I want to scream at them. And I want to yell at them. And I want to say, what's wrong with you idiots? It's going on. It's real. It's right in front of your face. Why can't you see it? Why don't you idiots just grab your women by the hair of the head and drag them on back to that cave where you come to talk about it? But you know what? What I realized was 80% of these people that I think are Neanderthals are not Neanderthals at all. They really know what's going on. They're using a term that I realized is called protected stupidity. Y'all know what protected stupidity is? That means it's pretending that you don't know what's going on. And somebody asked me, well, Judy, why would somebody pretend they don't know what's going on? I'll tell you why. It's because if they actually admitted something was going on, they would have to get up off their lazy butts, stop watching Gilligan's Island, and do something about the problem.
And do something about the problem. Forgive me if I... Well, hearing what Judy had to say there in June of this past year, you understand, I hope, why it is that I say so much of what I say. Because it's a shared conviction among those folks that I recognize nightly as the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks from Coal River Mountain Watch. Because nobody at Coal River, led by Judy, had any problem whatsoever getting up and talking truth to power, and didn't much care whether power liked it or not. It's like I said the other night. People who have no problems need no heroes. Heroes rise up to protect the weak, the weary, and the wounded among us. The put-upon people, the downtrodden. The Koch brothers need no hero. What they have, for instance, in this new House of Representatives is a group of bond slaves. People who will do their bidding at their whim. There's nothing heroic in slavery. But it takes a lot of guts to what Judy Bonds did. And say, to hell with it all, I'm doing what's right. Come hell or high water, I will do what is right. And that is the one thing that drove her day in and day out until the very end. There's a post up at headonradionetwork.com. The new executive director at Coal River Mountain Watch, Vernon Haltom, a dear friend of mine, reported back on the funeral of Judy Bonds yesterday. Judy was true to her word. She said, I don't want to be embalmed. Don't want a fancy casket. I just want to get in the dirt. Why embalm? Why put more poison into the earth? Because, you know, that stuff's poison. And so it was that she was buried quietly and quickly yesterday. And if you go to headonradionetwork.com, you can see the post with Vernon's report back on the funeral. Perhaps it's because I'm emotionally involved with all of this, but as I read it last night after the show, I sat and wept. But it's worth remembering that in times like these, we weep not for the dead, but for our own loss. And the voice that we lost in Judy Bonds was a profound one. It was earnest and genuine. It was sincere. It was truthful. It was fact-based. And that is what we grieve at the loss of. But you heard her. The only thing that will change is you getting out of your seats and into the streets. You demanding justice. Wherever you are. And when you find the courage to do that, you too become a hero in your own right. And that is the legacy of Judy Bonds. So go and have a look at Vernon's report. And, you know, I got a feeling if you just go to YouTube and start looking up Judy Bonds, you're going to find all kinds of clips. And you will be moved. It doesn't matter if you can't make it to some sort of massive rally in D.C. or some big city somewhere. It's the work that you will do on the ground in your own communities that will change things. And I hope that you will be moved to do that. You know, that supposedly holy book, most of which I reject because it's full of flim-flammery and mummery. Some of it, though, is applicable and truthful. And there is a line in that book that says, "Be ye doers of the word and not hearers only." The right wing gets that. They're out there being doers of their filthy philosophy and not hearers only every day. You know, a couple of nights ago we had a conversation with William, who was talking about how people feel free now to come up and just spew their right wingery. Well, that's because they are doers, the right wing. They are doers of the filthy words they are taught and not hearers only. The question is whether we, with actual facts, decency, morality, conscience, on our side, will be doers as well. Now, onward to the rest of the show. Of course, you know that we had the great big ceremonial reading of the Constitution in the House of Representatives today. It was quite the little circus. They explained, you may have heard Sandra call in the last week or so saying, what are they going to do about that 3/5 clause in there? Article 1, Section 2, Paragraph 3. What are they going to do about the 3/5 clause? Well, we found out. What the Republican Party did was with the 3/5 clause is pretend it wasn't there. They said they were going to read the Constitution as it was since it had been amended. But see, to amend the Constitution is not to excise language from it. It is merely to change its effect subsequent to the ratification. The original document remains what it is. And the Republicans proved their hypocrisy because while they refused to read the 3/5 clause, you know, the one that said that, well, dark-skinned people were 3/5 of the human being, While they refused to read that, oddly enough, they didn't see anything wrong with reading the clause about the currency being only made in gold or silver. Nothing in there about Federal Reserves nor fiat paper currency. Said the currency shall be either gold or silver. And they blew right into that. They read it and it was no problem. Even though that, by subsequent amendation of the Constitution, is no longer applicable. But what it boils down to is the right wing could not allow the three-fifths clause to be read openly because somewhere in the gallery they knew that there would be a bagger or dozen, teabaggers, who would hoot and holler and yell hooray and call for secession. Because that's just how hopelessly mired in stupidity the right wing are. And they proved it. They proved it. Because when they got into the portions of the Constitution dealing with the presidency, it happened to be a man that I've met, and a man of great good conscience and good spirit, a man named Frank Nevey, Hillbillies, one of the original co-sponsors of the Clean Water Protection Act, which in the previous Congress was H.R. 1310. Frank Pallone was reading that portion of the Constitution dealing with the requirements of the presidency. You can hear it. It's right here. I have not messed with the audio at all.
I now yield to the gentleman from New Jersey, Mr. Pallone.
No person except a natural-born citizen or a citizen of the United States at the time of the adoption of this Constitution shall be eligible to be the office of president. Neither shall...
The chair would remind persons in the gallery... The chair would remind all persons in the gallery that they are here as guests of the House and that any manifestation of approval or disapproval of the proceedings is a violation of the rules of the House. The chair notes a disturbance in the gallery in contravention of the law and rules of the House. The sergeant at arms will remove those persons responsible for the disturbance and restore order in the gallery. Gentleman from Virginia. Gentleman from New Jersey.
Yeah, the gentleman from New Jersey. What was that? Well, that was Teresa Cow. Teresa Cow. She's a birther. She's a supporter of Lieutenant Colonel Terry Lakin, who was court-martialed for refusing to follow a direct order based upon his stance that Barack Obama is a Kenyan fascist Islamist Muslim who had no rights to be given orders to no God-fearing members of the new United States military. And so consequently, when Congressman Pallone read that language, she began screaming in the gallery as dumber than dirt, dead from the neck up, baggers and birthers are wont to do. She screamed, Except Obama, Jesus help us! Because... I'm sorry, she didn't say that. She said, Except Obama, help us, Jesus! When Frank Pallone read the part about being a natural-born citizen of the United States. They gotta wear that one. The right wing does. That was their folks. Those are the people who sent them to do the people's business and take the country back.
Except Obama, help us, Jesus!
Help me, Obi-Wan, help me. You're our only hope, Obi-Wan. Dear Lord, the Morans ye have always with ye. I couldn't save that till Moran Monday. You wouldn't have expected me to do that, would you? But the fact of the matter is, the right wing, the Republican Party, pulled up an expurgated version of the United States Constitution because it was entirely too darn dangerous to read these simple words. Here we go. Let's just read the whole thing for the fun of it. Now, come on. Dadgummit, wrong link. Here we go. Article 1, Section 2, Paragraph 3. Let's just read all of Section 2. It doesn't take that long. The House of Representatives shall be composed of members chosen every second year by the people of the several states, and the electors in each state shall have the qualifications requisite for electors of the most numerous branch of the state legislature. No person shall be a representative who shall not have attained the age of 25 years and been 7 years a citizen of the United States, and who shall not, when elected, be an inhabitant of that state in which he shall be chosen. Representatives and direct taxes shall be apportioned among the several states which may be included within this union, according to their respective numbers, which shall be determined by adding to the whole number of free persons, including those bound to service for a term of years, and excluding Indians not taxed, 3/5 of all other persons. That was the language of which the Republican Party was utterly terrified. They couldn't. They couldn't. They simply could not allow that language to be included in the reading. Because for all they knew, upon the reading thereof, the state of South Carolina might have seceded. What's interesting, however, is that the language following the 3/5 clause says, the actual enumeration shall be made within 3 years after the first meeting of the Congress of the United States and within every subsequent term of 10 years, in such manner as they shall by law direct. And then this, the number of representatives shall not exceed one for every 30,000, but each state shall have at least one representative. And until such enumeration shall be made, the state of New Hampshire shall be entitled to choose 3, Massachusetts 8, Rhode Island and Providence Plantations 1, Connecticut 5, New York 6, New Jersey 4, Pennsylvania 8, Delaware 1, Maryland 6, Virginia 10, North Carolina 5, South Carolina 5, Georgia 3, Clemson nothing. Sorry, I added the Clemson part. That's all inapplicable. That's all old past history. It has absolutely nothing to do with the present state of affairs. But that part got read. You know, South Carolina 5, Georgia 3. That score got read. But we did not dare read, and excluding Indians not taxed, 3/5 of all other persons. Because I think even John Boehner, the Orange Crush, I think even he realizes he's got a little bit of a hood and sheep problem inside his party. And given the fact that they came, that at least one birther came unglued during the presidential requirements clause, God almighty, they might have started waving the stars and bars up there in the gallery if they'd read the 3/5. And they had to come up with this whole legal fiction for not reading it. Upon inquiry, the Goober Hogshead, the representative from Virginia that came up with this foolishness, said that the reason they were doing it this way was because, well, there's the old school constitutions in the Library of Congress, and anybody can go read that wants to. Well, we're going to read the Constitution version that we like. But there's another problem with that. And it's not just any old problem. This is kind of serious when you think about how it is that the Republican Party goes about doing its business. I think we mentioned on the program that Supreme Court Justice Anthony Fat Tony Scalia was asked for his opinion on the 14th Amendment. 14th Amendment overruled the Dred Scott decision back in 1868. It allowed African Americans and former slaves to actually become citizens, you know, not very first-class ones, mind you, but citizens of the United States. So here's the question. In 1868, when the 39th Congress was debating and ultimately proposing the 14th Amendment, I don't think anybody would have thought that equal protection applied to sex discrimination, or certainly not to sexual orientation. So does that mean that we've gone off in error by applying the 14th Amendment to both? Scalia, answer, yes, yes. Sorry to tell you that, but you know, if indeed the current society has come to different views, that's fine. You do not need the Constitution to reflect the wishes of the current society. Certainly the Constitution does not require discrimination on the basis of sex. The only issue is whether it prohibits it. It doesn't. Nobody ever thought that that's what it meant. Nobody ever voted for that. If the current society wants to outlaw discrimination by sex, hey, we have things called legislatures and they enact things called laws. You don't need a constitution to keep things up to date. All you need is a legislature and a ballot box. You don't like the death penalty anymore? That's fine. You want a right to abortion? There's nothing in the Constitution about that, but that doesn't mean you cannot prohibit it. Persuade your fellow citizens it's a good idea and pass a law. That's what democracy's all about. It's not about 9 superannuated judges who have been there too long imposing these demands on society. You see, Fat Tony Scalia is what they call a constitutional originalist. If it ain't in the Constitution as it was intended by the framers, it doesn't exist. And yet here's the legislative body of the United States, as led by the Republican Party in the House of Representatives, reading an expurgated version of the Constitution, removing the three-fifths clause but keeping the gold and silver standard in. Hypocrite, 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 hypocrite. I never cease to be amazed at the degree to which the right wing can turn anything into a parody of itself, including something as simple as the reading of the Constitution. What do I mean by that? Well, there's a Monty Python skit that's rather famous. Really, and that's the problem. The right wing doesn't understand parody or humor. To wit, this.
Can you help me?
Good morning.
Do you have 30 days in the San Marcos desert with the Duchess of Kent by A.E.J. Elliott, O.B.E.?
Well, I don't know the book, madam.
Well, never mind. How about 101 Ways to Start a Fight?
By?
An Irish gentleman whose name eludes me for the moment.
No, well, we haven't got it.
Okay, that's a more recent version. Let's go back to the funny one.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir. Can I help you?
Yes. Do you have a copy of 30 Days in the Samarkand Desert with the Duchess of Kent by A.E.J. Elliot, O.B.E.?
Well, I don't know the book, sir.
Never mind. How about 101 Ways to Start a Fight?
By?
An Irish gentleman whose name eludes me for the moment.
No, we haven't got it in stock, sir.
Not to worry. Can you help me with David Copperfield?
Ah, yes, Dickens.
No.
A big one?
No, Edmund Wells.
I think you'll find Charles Dickens wrote David Copperfield, sir.
No. Dickens wrote David Copperfield with two P's. This is David Copperfield with one P by Edmund Wells.
David Copperfield with one P?
Yes, I should have said.
Yes, well, in that case, we don't have it.
Funny, you've got a lot of books here.
Yes, we do, but we don't have David Copperfield with one P by Edmund Wells.
Are you quite sure?
Quite.
Not worth just looking?
Definitely not.
How about Great Expectations?
Yes, well, we have that.
That's G-R-A-T-E Expectations, also by Edmund Wells.
Yes, well, in that case, we don't have it. We don't have anything by Edmund Wells, actually. He's not very popular.
Not Nicholas Nickleby? That's K-N-I-C-K-E-R-L-E-S-S?
No.
Christmas Carol with a K?
No.
How about A Sale of Two Titties?
Definitely not.
Sorry to trouble you.
Not at all.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Oh!
Yes.
I wonder if you might have a copy of Barnaby Budd.
No, as I say, we're right out of Edmund Wells.
No, not Edmund Wells. Charles Dickens.
Charles Dickens?
Yes.
You mean Barnaby Rudge?
No, Barnaby Budd by Charles Dickens. That's Dickens with two K's, the well-known Dutch author.
No, well, we don't have Barnaby Budge by Charles Dickens with two K's, the well-known Dutch author. And perhaps to save time, I should add that we don't have Carnaby Fudge by Charles Dickens, or Farnborough Sludge by Miles Pickens, or even Stickwick Stapers by Farles Wickens with four M's and a silent Q. Why don't you try W.H. Smith's?
I did. They sent me here.
Did they?
I wonder...
Oh, do go on, please.
I wonder if you might have The Amazing Adventures of Captain Gladys Stoat pamphlet and her intrepid spaniel Stig amongst the giant pygmies of Beccles. Volume 8.
No, we don't have that. Funny, we got a lot of books here. Well, I mustn't keep you standing here.
It's 1 o'clock now. I saw it over there. Olson's Standard Book of British Birds.
Olson's Standard Book of British Birds?
Yes.
O-L-S-E-N?
Yes.
B-I-R-D-S?
Yes.
Yes, well, we do have that, as a matter of fact.
The expurgated version.
Sorry, I didn't quite catch that.
The expurgated version.
The expurgated version of Olson's Standard Book of British Birds?
The one without the gannet.
The one without the gannet? They've all got the gannet. It's a standard British bird, the gannet. It's in all the books.
Well, I don't like them. They wet their nests.
All right, I'll remove it. Any other birds you don't like?
I don't like the robin.
The robin? Right, the robin. There you are. Any others you don't like? Any others?
The nut hatch.
Right, the nut hatch. Here we are. There you are. No gannets, no robins, no nut hatches. There's your book.
I can't buy that. It's torn. I wonder if you have...
Come on, ask me anything. We got lots of books here, don't we? It's a bookshop.
How about Biggles Combs His Hair?
No, we don't have that one. Funny.
The Gospel According to Charlie Drake?
No. Try me again.
I know. Ethel the Aardvark Goes Quantity Surveying.
No. What?
Ethel the Aardvark Goes Quantity Surveying.
Ethel the Aardvark... I've got it! I've seen it somewhere! Yes! Here we are, Ethel the Aardvark Goes Quantity Surveying. There's your book. Now, buy it.
I don't have enough money.
I'll take a deposit.
I don't have any money.
I'll take a check.
I don't have a checkbook.
I'll take a black one.
I haven't got a bank account.
Right. I'll buy it for you. Here you are. There's your change. There's some money for a taxi on the way home. There's your book.
Wait.
What?
I can't read.
You can't read. Right. Sit down. Sit now. Are you sitting comfortably? Right. Ethel the Aardvark was...
You get the idea. That's the Republican Party. They read the expurgated Constitution. I don't want the three-fifths clause. Those slaves, they wet their shanties. God help us. Dog help us. Flying Spaghetti Monster, help us!
Like I said, we're looking at this for 2 years. We may be looking at it for 4, 6, 8. And you know what? I may have to withdraw my bet, by the way. Jebby Bush was heard to say unequivocally today or the last couple of days that he has no interest whatsoever in running for president in 2012. He's quite certain of it. But he won't rule out 2016. I did a little bit of math. In 2016, Jebby will be 63 years old. So that means he would be 64 entering the presidency, and so what? The Bushes apparently live to be, they live to inordinate old age. Witness the hateful, pearl-clutching beast that is his mother. So I don't know. That throws the whole presidential 2012 thing into an entirely different light. But yes, we got the expurgated version of the Constitution of the United States. But only expurgated here and there to suit the Republican Party. But expurgation is apparently all the rage right now. The New York Times offering an editorial today. Does one word change Huckleberry Finn? The New York Times has apparently heard about the new edition of Huckleberry Finn that is being offered by Alan Gribben, an English professor at Auburn University in Montgomery, Alabama, otherwise known as Goat Hill. That's where the capital sits in Montgomery, Alabama, Goat Hill. He proposed the idea to New South Publishing that he would like to do a new version of Huckleberry Finn by Mark Twain without any budgies. Oh, I'm sorry, without any niggers. So the word nigger has been replaced in this new edition, where it occurs 219 times in the book, by the word slave. Just to make sure they didn't miss anything, the word engine, I-N-J-U-N, has been replaced by the proper spelling, Indian, I-N-D-I-A-N, with a capital I, and two K's. He said his idea, he gave the idea to the publisher, because he thinks the pervasive use of that word, and I don't mean Indian, engine, makes it harder for students to read or absorb the book. He wrote an introduction to the new edition and said, quote, even at the level of college and graduate school, no, I'm sorry, I got the wrong accent again, even at the level of college and graduate school, students are capable of resenting textual encounters with this racial appellative. Really? You know what? If you make it to graduate school and you resent text, or I'm sorry, a textual encounter because of racial appellatives, then you probably ought not be in graduate school. And I don't know what's next coming from New South Publishing. The Nigger or the Narcissus? I don't know. I don't like the word. But really? Mark Twain? This isn't a comic book we're fooling with here. And Indian instead of engine? The word engine appears as a function of the dialect in which Twain wrote. I will submit to you. And before I submit to you, I will freely admit that I am as white as white can be, and to the point of, you know, I get a sunburn under the refrigerator bulb. I'm so pale, pasty, and white. I got a feeling about a month from now, I'm going to get absolutely roasted where I'm going. But that's okay. That's what they make SPF Avogadro's number for. Even at the, see, Anybody wanting to know why Alan Gribben, English professor at Auburn University, Montgomery, did this, need only note that he wrote an introduction to the new edition. Hint, it's his new edition. Hint, he gets paid. He gets a check. You know, I remember when Ted Turner started colorizing movies. This is sort of like the uncolorizing of Huck Finn. But the New York Times has to ask, in classic New York Times fashion, but is there never any justification for altering a classic, even if the revised edition would serve a specialized audience like high school students or readers who feel assaulted and are unable to get past that epithet? This is really disturbing. And you know what? I'm open to being told I'm wrong from anyone of color that wishes to do so. But I don't think I am. But then again, that's the white privilege just glowing and radiating off of me. And I'm not going to go through a litany of, you know, what if it was Jim or Jim or any other epithets. And I don't feel like going into some sort of long apologia for how that word existed in 19th century America. I think this being one of the most intelligent radio listening audiences on the planet, I don't gotta. But this idea of text being made approachable, it's not like it's a translation. It's not like, I don't know, the Bible. You know, I remember in the 70s when the Living Bible came out, and all of a sudden the Bible didn't read like the Bible no more. It read like the hippie down the street, which was kind of nice, really, because the hippies were generally nicer people than most of the folks that exist in the Bible. But, of course, the old guard conservatives were still shocked and offended. God spoke King James English. When you give in on a word because of the concerns of prudish school administrators, and what are we calling them, students resenting textual encounters with a racial appellative, then you've given up on teaching, haven't you? I think you have. You have given up on teaching. Because this book is an admission that apparently no teacher in high school, no teacher in college, and according to Professor Gribben, no doctoral professor offering guidance to a graduate student is capable of overcoming and explaining why that word exists in that text as it does. And that is a profound admission about the failure of both education as well as an admission or a confession of the toxic quality of this country. Because just like Teresa Cow sitting in the gallery of the House of Representatives this morning, waiting for her opportunity to scream, "Accept Obama! Accept Obama! Help us, Jesus!" Just like her, there is a nascent fear, I submit, that it's not so much the people who would be put off by the word in the text, but the ones who would hear that word as an excuse for them to bring it back into common parlance. I'm talking about little redneck children. and little up-east Yankee children, and little Western children and Midwestern children, little white children. You know how you get around that word in Twain? Shh. You teach Huck Finn, and then you follow it with Soul on Ice. That is how you get around that word in that text. You let real voices speak for themselves. The Auburn guy has been interviewed, David in Tennessee tells me, and he says, I did this so that teachers could teach rather than running around the room saying, Twain didn't mean it in the way it would be meant today. I didn't want teachers to be so burdened. God! What's next? I'll tell you what's next. He's sitting in Montgomery, Alabama. And that's just a few clicks north of Monroeville. And Monroeville is the actual setting of the little town that is described in To Kill a Mockingbird. I suspect, however, Miss Professor Gribben will have to wait until Harper Lee shuffles off this mortal coil and goes to her reward before he can start monkeying with that sacred text. Because you see, at least to me, these are sacred texts. The Constitution of the United States is as close to a sacred text as this secular society has. And so too is Huckleberry Finn. And so too is To Kill a Mockingbird. This is the camel's editorial nose under the tent. But I've got a comparison and contrast set up here. I do yet to this day retain a little bit of the wannabe professor in me. I apologize. But I want to put a couple of things out there for you in terms of textual approachability. Let's go back a few centuries. What would this be? The 14th century? Not sure. Can't remember. Some professor, huh? How approachable is this?
Juanata Prilla with his sure suitor, the drouth of March hath pierced to Rute, and bothered every vein in swish liqueur, of which virtue engendered is the floor. One see for seek with his sweeter breath, inspired hath in every holt and heath, the tender cropes and the youngest owner, hath in the ram his half coursey rona, and smaller foal is making malodee, that sleepin' all the night with open ee. So pricketh him natura in her courages, than a longen folk to goon on pilgrimages, and palmeres, for to seek in strange strondes, to ferne hallways, quotha in sundry londes, and especially from every shire's ende of England to Canterbury they wende, the holy blissful martyr for the seek, that hem hath holpen when that they were seek. Befield it in that season on a day in Southwark at the tabard as I lay, ready to wenden on my pilgrimage to Canterbury with full devout courage. At night were come into that hostelrie, well 29 in company of sundry folk by a venture fall, in fellowship and pilgrims were they all that toward Canterbury wold and ride. The chambres and the stables were in wide, and well we were in Esid at the best. Now, I gotta tell you, Chaucer ain't terribly approachable. And that's the prologue.
And when you get into the meat of it, that is some of the dirtiest literature that has ever been produced in the English language, if you define dirty as bawdy, as sexually innuendo-laden. It's almost as dirty as the Bible. But it ain't very approachable. Now, contrast for approachability's sake. Miss Watson's nigger Jim had a hairball big as your fist, which had been took out of the fourth stomach of an ox, and he used to do magic with it. He said there was a spirit inside of it, and it knowed everything. So I went to him that night and told him Pap was here again, for I found his tracks in the snow. What I wanted to know was what he was going to do and what was he going to stay. Jim got out his hairball and said something over it, and then he held it up and dropped it on the floor. It fell pretty solid and only rolled about an inch. Jim tried it again and then another time, and it acted just the same. Jim got down on his knees and put his ear against it and listened. But it weren't no use. He said it wouldn't talk. He said sometimes it wouldn't talk without money. I told him I had an old slick counterfeit quarter that weren't no good because the brass showed through the silver a little, and it wouldn't pass nohow even if the brass didn't show because it was so slick it felt greasy, and so that would tell on it every time. I reckon I wouldn't say nothing about the dollar I got from the judge. I said it was pretty bad money, but maybe the hairball would take it because maybe it would know the wouldn't know the difference. Jim smelt it and bit it and rubbed it and said he'd manage so the hairball wouldn't think it was so good. He said he would split open a raw Irish potato and stick the quarter in between and keep it there all night, and next morning you couldn't see no brass and it wouldn't feel greasy no more, and so anybody in town would take it in a minute, let alone a hairball. Well, I knowed a potato would do that before, but I'd forgot it. Jim put the quarter under the hairball and got down and listened again. This time he said the hairball was all right. He said it would tell me my whole fortune if I wanted it to. I says, go on. So the hairball talked to Jim, and Jim told it to me. He says, your father don't know what he's going to do. Sometimes he speck you go away, and then again he speck you stay. The best way is to rest easy and let that old man take his own way. There's two angels hovering around about him. One of them's white and shining, the other one's black. The white one gets him to do a ride a little while, then the black one sail in and bust it all up. Body can't tell yet which one gwine to fetch him at the last. But you's all right. You gwine to have considerable trouble in your life and considerable joy. Sometimes you gwine to get hurt and sometimes you gwine to get sick, but every time you gwine to get well again. There's two gals flying about you in your life. One of them's light and the other one is dark. One of them's rich and the other one's poor. You gwine to marry the poor one first and the rich one by and by. You wants to keep away from them the water as much as you can and don't run no risk. Because it's down in the bills that you're going to get hung. When I lit my candle and went up to my room that night, there sat Pap, his own self. How unapproachable is that? That's a whole bunch of words strung together right there, and that one word you mean to tell me that one word, and yes, it happens 219 times, but it happens 219 times in a whole book. But that one word renders the single greatest literary classic ever produced on the North American continent in American English, that one word renders it unapproachable even to graduate students. I call BS. Sure enough, I do. I call BS. And I will restate my thesis. We can't have that word in that book, because little school children in Alabama will take to using it again, because it comes to them like water to a duck. And it comes to like water to a duck to white people all over this country. And right now we live in a country that's in the process of being taken back by who? Yeah, the white people. And maybe this might not be a real good time to have the secessionists and the birthers and the deathers and the tenthers and the booger eaters hollering that word all over the country. Of course, I guess I'm a little cantankerous because I just assume they did. Because they're thinking it. They think it every time they see a person who is of a color darker than pet milk. And I'm not making that up. It is the truth. And you can't lance a hidden boil. That thing's got to be laid bare and busted out and the pus run all over. Well, there's the dinner table conversation for tonight. And I guess that's what the right wing talks about when they object to political correctness. That they don't get to say that word near as often as they'd like to. But God, they'd like to. So we'll take a little break and come back with your phone calls. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice, Thorn in the Side Thursday. This is The Horn, and, well, I'm Bob.
Moonlight and magnolias, starlight in your hair, all the world a dream come true. Did it really happen? Was I really there? Was I really there with you? We lived our little drama. We kissed in a field of wine, and stars fell on Alabama that night. Forget the glamour. Your eyes held a tender light, and stars fell on Alabama last night. I never planned in my imagination a situation so heavenly, a fairy land that no one else could enter, and in the center just you and me. Dear, my heart beat like a hammer, my arms went round you tight, and stars fell on Alabama last night. All right, let's take it on down to Muscle Shoals through Decatur. Birmingham. Ooh, Montgomery. Right up over the Spanish Fork into Mobile, my hometown, Mr. T. A situation so heavenly, a fairy land that no one else could enter, and in the center just you and me. Dear, my heart beats like a hammer, my arms went round you tight. All stars Yes, we live our little drama. We kissed on the dew, so I and stars fell on Alabama last night.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Minute past the hour, we begin the second hour, and I guess I just had to get all of that off of my chest. Lines are stacked up and jacked up right now, but we'll clear some space here in a couple of minutes. Quick trip to the email bag before we go to the phones. This in from our buddy Corey in the Free State of Louisville. Corey says, my opinion. As a person with a high amount of pigment in my skin, here's what I have to say. Changing any text of a book without the direct permission of the author renders the book a completely new entity. That book should be called The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, told in a fashion that is not offensive to white people because they don't want to be reminded that they oppressed every single minority in this country already or dragged here against their will. That's the whole name of the book. You ever notice that the word niggardly isn't being used much anymore? Yeah, same syndrome. Yeah, by the way, niggardly, N-I-G-G-A-R-D-L-Y, has nothing to do with skin color. It's a word derived, I think, and I'm willing to stand corrected by our Swedish expert, Scott, in Sweden. I think it is of Swedish derivation. It means to be stingy, I think. I could be wrong. But Corey says, yeah, same syndrome. People are scared crapless that just any hint of using the word nigger, if the one who is using it isn't as dark as a piece of milk chocolate, automatically makes one racist. And just for the record, I never used that word myself, and I don't like black people calling themselves that word either. It is self-hate. We lose a piece of history when classical works like Twain's Huckleberry Finn have to be cleaned up for the tender, sensitive, innocent eyes of our American high school youth. I guarantee you that the kids in high school are calling each other worse things in the hallways. Political correctness is the death of our American history because people refuse to call what something was now what it was then. This from Kate. Dear Professor Bob, you sure enough know how to make Chaucer sound good and raunchy. Loved it then, loved it now, good stuff that. P.S. Huck Finn is about as exciting and informative as listening to it. Well, the comparison escapes me. I'm distracted by the stars falling, with some parentheticals. It, pretty enough to make me weep. All right, back to the phones. Here we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
Hey, Cassie.
How are you?
I'm doing good. How about you?
Doing well. Huck Finn is a great book, and, you know, I think that you have it wrong, though, about why it is that they want to do this.
Okay.
Okay, so the guy who is rewriting it.
Yeah, Professor Gribben.
Yeah. He is the one who's going to make money, right?
Right. And you know, he didn't have to work hard for it. All he had to do was write the intro, and then he put it in his word processor, and he did a global search and replace, and he typed in the N-word, and then he typed replace it with slave.
Right. So, okay, so here's what's really going on. All of the districts in the South that ban books, because when I was in high school, we did banned book week every year, and we learned about how many different districts were banning things. Huck Finn is the most banned book in the whole country.
Yes.
In school libraries and in school curriculum. So, what he's doing, he's just out to make a buck.
Oh, absolutely.
This is not, I don't think that this is about political correctness, or certainly it's not about what he said.
No, it's about his bank account. Sure, absolutely. If I didn't make that clear, let me now. Yes. About getting paid.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's just doing it for money. But it's the problem is that the schools that are going to use it, first of all, kids already think that textbooks and half of the books that teachers show us are dumbed down anyway. But if we know, like, the stuff that appears in textbooks is only like a half a chapter of a book, and even then they kind of like clean it up and say adapted from. They don't actually say what it really is. Because they do this a lot.
I guess that reduces the James Joyce's Ulysses to about the title page and not much else.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, they do that with a lot of things. But first of all, I mean, kids already don't trust that they're learning things that are important. But if we're not learning things that are authentic either, then who's going to be interested in it?
Well, isn't there a stigma attached to any book if a teacher says, read this?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Not to me, but to most people. Yeah. Yeah. And then, like, all of the best conversations we had in class when we read Huck Finn, all of them, not all of them, but a lot of them revolved around the language. It revolves around what was Huck thinking when he used this word, and what's really going on, and what's the difference between respect and equality and friendship, and I mean, like, all those things. How are you even going to have?
Well, you remember toward the end of the book when Huck has his real moral existential crisis between turning Jim in for the reward money.
Yeah.
And letting Jim go free, and I don't think I'm spoiling it for anybody, when Huck finally says, I reckoned I'd let him go and just have to go to hell on my own account.
Yeah.
If you spent the entire book changing the word to slave, it doesn't make any sense anymore. Because the whole thing is just absolutely full of Huck trying to sort out in his own head that he's dealing with an actual human being.
Right. Right. No, it's ridiculous. It's about money-making, and it's going to work. I mean, that's the really sad thing.
Well, look at the free publicity dude's gotten. Nothing like Band in Boston to sell a book, and this is the 21st century equivalent of that. But the other thing he's doing is he is piggybacking, Cassie, he is piggybacking on the release of the autobiography of Mark Twain, which came out, you know, a month and a half or so ago.
Right.
Because he's figuring there's going to be a renewed interest in Twain, so he's got a chance to, what's that phrase from The Godfather? Wet his beak. Gonna make him some money. But I do maintain, however, that the underlying philosophical debate is not so much about the people who are offended by the word, but about the fear that people will say, well, you know, Mark Twain used it. So I can't.
Yeah, but, I mean, people use the words that we hear in songs and that we see on the movies anyway. I mean, this is not... You know, my generation is not the generation that's growing up with words bleeped out. I mean, if a movie's on TV and they're bleeping the words...
And your generation didn't invent them either.
Anyway. No. But, like, we're not as sheltered as... I don't know who they're trying to protect, but... It's just stupid.
Well, when I heard I'd planned on doing this story tonight anyway, but when I heard the screaming idiot birther in the gallery of the house today, Cassie, there was sort of a harmonic convergence, and I realized that that the two actually had something in common that didn't appear to be it was one of those Sesame Street things.
She didn't call Obama that, did she?
No, she screamed, except when Frank Pallone read the part about the president being a natural-born citizen, she screamed, accept Obama, help us, Jesus.
Jesus wasn't born in the United States either.
No, but he could be president. He's a citizen of the world. Because he's God. But we won't go into that.
It's just ridiculous. It's going to be scary. A Republican Congress now?
Oh, and they're already busy.
Yeah, they're not busy with anything they campaigned for. They're only busy with the causing trouble and having parties for themselves and trying to overturn things that isn't going to work anyway.
Oh no, they're actually making some nice little deals out there. They say that every piece of legislation that comes out of the House is going to have a statement justifying it in the Constitution, and no legislation can come out of the House that doesn't cut no additional funding for one program can come out that doesn't cut funding somewhere else. But curiously, Cassie, they left out tax cuts from that whole thing, because you can always cut taxes.
Right, and they left out the military from the cutting side.
Well, you can't do that.
There's a lot of waste in the military.
More than there is well-spent money, I would submit.
And there's more waste in the military than there is in the departments that are building roads or anything useful.
Well, it's the eternal dynamic tension between guns and butter.
Yeah, well.
Guns are winning, in case anybody's keeping score.
And these Republicans who are doing this, how many of them get their campaign money from arms manufacturers?
All. I mean, does anyone think there's a Republican out there that does...
contractors and...
Yeah, defense contractors, yada, yada, yada. By the way, do you know who wasn't there for the reading of the Constitution today? Michelle Bachmann.
That's because she's running for president. Did you see that?
Yes. Oh, I want to see the debate.
Somebody would vote for her, too.
Oh, but I want to see the debate between her and Mussolini.
Not me.
That'll be because they hate each other. I mean, it's like reality television hate. Just can't wait, can you? Gosh, she'll be a junior by then.
Yeah. Well, I'll be a junior right before the election.
Mm-hmm. Which means that you'll be, you'll be getting ready to be a senior by the time the new, either the second Obama administration or the first Romney, Huckabee, Bachmann, Palin, Gingrich administration begins. Sorry, didn't mean to ruin anything for you.
Well, I hope it's the second Obama administration.
Well, I do too.
Are the Republicans planning to dismantle the student loan stuff?
Oh yeah. Yeah, because Pell Grants are evil. If God had intended people to be educated, he would have made them rich Republicans.
I go to school with a lot of rich Republicans.
Oh,
in Texas I only knew like fundy Republicans, but here I know rich Republicans. Okay,
it's comparison contrast time, even though you're still on break. Which is worse?
Well, the fundies you can't talk any sense to. And, I don't know, like, the rich Republicans will admit that a lot of it's about greed. I mean, it won't change what they do, but they'll at least... They'll at least admit that they know what the game is.
But just like a fundy, they believe in sane things too, like tax cuts create jobs, right? I mean, that's right up there with a cracker turning into human flesh in the tummy.
Yeah, I think so.
When do you go back?
I'm back. Well, I mean, we don't start school for another week and a half, but I'm back.
And studying for finals.
Yes.
I still say that's brutal. We gotta have a talk with the chancellor.
Yeah.
See here, son. Well, good luck, Cassie.
Thank you.
Glad you got back there, up there okay, and at least you missed all the really ugly snow.
Yes. Yes. Well, we had like 3 inches today, and it's so pretty.
Yeah, that's the pretty stuff. But remember, all snow after December 25th is ultimately annoying snow.
Oh, the first inch is so pretty.
And it goes downhill from there in a real hurry.
Yeah, but it melts.
Not always. Remember, we're not even into the full teeth of winter yet.
Yeah. But I still like it.
You'll get over it, trust me.
Probably.
Sorry, I'm a cynic. I know. I was one of those southern. I was one of those southern people once who thought snow was pretty too. I despise the stuff. It takes about 10 years.
Probably because you have to shovel and.
No, I've got a teenager for that. Did that stop you in your tracks? What do you think? What do you think Ferg exists for? Hey, kid, you want
the garbage and?
Yeah, you hey.
Garbage.
Hey, bring in the groceries and shovel the driveway and tote that barge, lift that bale 15 miles in the Erie Canal. What do you think? I'm keeping this roof over your head for fun?
Well, that's because you want when he's a grandfather for him to be able to say that he walked both ways to school and it.
Well, yes. Uphill both ways, mustard sandwiches, the whole deal.
Yeah.
Even though there's a beautiful pot of oxtail soup on the stove right now.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah. Good stuff.
Cool. So I'm living in a house by myself right now.
Really?
It's really weird.
I'm
house sitting.
Oh, cool. So when...
Until the dorm opens again.
Oh, when does the dorm open?
Like a day before classes start.
Oh, that's brutal.
Yeah.
And so your dorm is what, about 4 feet by 12? Or 4 feet by 6? Tiny, tiny little rooms?
My room is 8x8, but I'm in a suite.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so you've got a common area out there where you can fight over what's on TV?
Yeah, well, yeah.
I'm sorry, I just remember
or
this
people,
stuff.
No, or people put on their headphones and watch on their computer.
And isolate themselves from the... Right.
Well, yeah, it's so weird. It's like you can have 5 people in the same room, and they're all wearing earphones. And, like, nobody... It's really weird.
I tend to agree. And it takes something away from the human interaction. But I have great faith as you go into these finals that you're going to kick butt, and the next semester will just be awesomer.
That would be cool.
That's a new word. Right. Awesomer.
No, it's not.
Take care, Cassie.
Bye.
Bye now. Cassie, back at college, in the hallowed halls of Princeton among the rich Republicans. Let's keep it rolling. Okay, not that one, though. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey,
Susan, what's up?
Well, first of all, am I the only one who found this reading of the Constitution rather condescending?
Oh, I was going for silly, but I'll take condescending. It's much better on the Scrabble board.
Yeah, considering that there are people sitting there in that house who could recite the entire document from memory, like, you know, oh, just off the top of my head, Dennis Kucinich. You know, just to name one.
Yeah, I did notice that Agent Orange had to read his portion, and then Nancy Pelosi stepped up and recited it from memory.
That just really irked me. Another thing that irked me is here they are solemnly reading the Constitution. Now, the last time you looked in the Constitution, where was the section? The article that established the dictatorship.
You know, I missed that one. That must be in the other expurgated version.
Because this Congress, this House, has established a dictatorship. Our present dictator is named Representative Ryan.
Yes. Who will hold the budget hostage.
Yeah, I want to know what constitutional premise they are using to put him in to govern by fiat. The last time we had somebody doing that, we ended up having a revolution and tossing people overboard, not to mention a whole bunch of tea.
Oh, let's not encourage them again. I've heard enough tea for the last year to last. I don't even drink this stuff anymore.
Well, you must be out of your decaf. But you know what I'm...
No, the baggers are just putting me off it.
But you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, I do, absolutely. No, I get it. I get it most assuredly.
Yeah, and what kills me is they're sitting there oh so smug.
Well, they specialize in smug, Susan.
Yeah, they're sitting there oh so smug and oh so proud of themselves, and apparently they've never read a history book, the one that relates how the Third Reich did not take power by force, it was bloody well elected.
True enough, but you have to understand, speaking of the Third Reich, the right wing is rewriting that as well. One of those right wing sites has now, well funded, has now officially declared that Nazism was a gay S&M movement. Not kidding.
Oh, I don't doubt that you're not kidding. But you and I both know the difference.
Namely?
We are in the process of repeating history, and it's going to get ugly. It's going to get really, really ugly.
Well, is it or... See, I think it's going to get economically ugly. You've got Ron Paul out there, as Benny in the chat room noted at the beginning of the program. Ron Paul's out there saying people need to understand that the United States is bankrupt. And what Benedict noted was, you know, bankruptcy is a legal fiction and a legal mechanism for dealing with insolvency. There is no such mechanism for government, for good reason. You know, all of these right wing idiots who say, well, Joe and Jane Sixpack down the road, they're having to tighten their belts and cut their budgets. Well, we need to too. Well, that's just a lie.
Yeah, Joe and Jane Sixpack don't have a printing press. Here's the deal. What set off World War II?
Depends on which part of the setting off you're talking about. The rise of the Reich, the inaction of the Western powers, the deal between Hitler and Stalin. Which part are you? The invasion of Poland, the annexation of the Sudetenland.
Further back than that.
Beer hall putsch. The crash of the German economy following the harsh reparations
Bingo.
Demanded by the Treaty of Versailles.
Bingo.
Yeah.
Now, when people are starving, they turn to scapegoats. Now, in Germany, they had a really nice one. It was called Jews. And
well, that was just a 2,000-year-old European tradition.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Hey, they were handy. And he started with the Jews, the communists, the retarded, and so on and so forth. And Katie barred the door. When things get bad economically, people look for scapegoats. Anybody who belongs to a religious minority. Guys, I would suggest you get really nervous because things are going to get really icky. It can happen here.
Oh, without a doubt. It can happen here.
Just do it. I'll tell you, put it in one sentence. I'm ready to run on a moment's notice.
And lucky for you that you're close enough you can do some running.
Yeah.
I gotta stay and play.
You will not see me moving away from the Canadian border.
But seriously, Susan, what about the rest of us who have to stay and play?
Yeah, that's the problem. If you had mountains that were intact, I would say just go back into the mountains, but you can't because the coal industry just, pardon my French, they fucked them up. Uh-oh.
Yes.
Oh,
by the way, what I told you about that wingnut site with lots of money behind it, that is you've got dog in this hunt, too. The question they have posted, were Nazis a homosexual pagan cult?
Oh, see, I told you it's already started. I knew that. I've been talking to Agnes. We've noticed it's already started. They've already started on the propaganda for us. Talk to your wife, Bob. Talk to your wife.
I do that once in a while.
Yeah. Have you seen the trailers for a new movie with Nicolas Cage?
No. What is it?
Season of the Witch. She takes over men's souls.
Female doesn't have to be a witch to do that.
Well, this one apparently is.
You know, and in my case, all it takes is red hair, and I'm done.
Yeah, I know, but in this case, they're going to burn her. Tell me, sound familiar?
Well, at some point in time, there's going to have to... Has there been a make? Would it be a remake? We need a full-on make of Margaret Atwood's The Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah, that probably wouldn't be a bad idea. Except, you know, they would probably twist... Right now, it would probably be twisted to the point where The Handmaid would end up being an evil witch.
Oh, and by the way, the one thing that did not... I got to tell you, the one thing that did not happen today during the reading of the Constitution, or as I was tweeted at by a wingnut, our great Constitution.
Yeah. Our great.
Because I didn't know we had a lesser one. I didn't know we had a mediocre Constitution. You only use great when there's something that's not great to compare it to. But, you know, there I go. What didn't happen is not Joe, but Addison... But we'll call him Joe anyway. Wilson stood up to read his chunk of the Constitution, and I would have given anything. But you know, liberals were so darned well behaved. Nobody in the House of Representatives and nobody in the gallery was willing to scream at him, "You lie!"
I was thinking the same thing. I know we are just too damn polite. Which I guess, in one way, that's good, but in another way, you know. But I really hope the DCC is making the campaign commercials right now, because they aren't 2 days in and they've already busted a whole bunch of campaign promises.
Yeah, but I don't think Democrats are that media savvy.
Wish they were. Somebody would, please, God.
Yeah, but I mean, look at the fundamental dishonesty you're dealing with here. Chinless Mitch McConnell has declared, you know, after participating, God knows, busters. Mitch, him also, is not Mitch, I might add.
Yeah. Personally, I like the name Yertle.
That's pretty good.
Yertle the Turtle.
Yeah. And Yertle McConnell has a sort of a sort of musical. Yeah, that works. That works.
Yeah, well, he looks like a turtle. You have to admit.
He looks like the first syllable of that word.
Yeah, well, yeah, I agree with there, too.
Ooh, I'm on fire tonight. Hey, Susan, it's been...
I
go ahead.
I... There's only one thing I wanted to say about the post with Judy.
Yes.
About Judy Sooner. The picture that goes with it is a picture of Coal River Mountain, the way it used to look. And I picked that deliberately. Because I wanted to have associated with her.
Well, that was, I mean, that's been part and parcel of her great fight.
Yeah, what I wanted, you know, Jeff Biggard said that all she wanted was to go home. That was what she wanted to go home to, not the blasted wreck that was.
Well, and yeah, and bear in mind the home up Marfork Holler that she wanted to go to. That doesn't exist.
Nothing left. Yeah, and so I came as close as I could.
Nicely done. I appreciate it. It's beautiful. And I'm really glad because I wanted folks to be able to read it. Because Vernon wrote some beautiful, beautiful stuff.
And I never met her, but, yeah.
She was something. And, you know, fortunately for a lot of folks who never met her, there is a ton of video and audio of her out there. Yeah. Judy's even in the archives of this program.
Yeah, I know. She was a great lady.
She was indeed.
And, I'm kind of worried about, you know, they mentioned putting up a memorial later on, and I'm kind of worried about that because I have a feeling if they put up a public memorial, the coal thugs are just going to come in and deface it.
If they do, it will be to their eternal shame. But a lot of stuff is under consideration right now, and in fact, the public memorial is slated, Susan, for the 15th of this month. And the details will be released as they are finalized.
I hope 100,000 people show up.
That would be something.
What do you do?
It's going to be a pretty doggone big group, any way you slice it.
I really do.
Well, Susan, thank you for getting that up there. I really appreciate it. And you have yourself a wonderful evening, okay?
Give my love to everybody.
Sure will. Take care.
Okay, bye.
Bye now. News Ninja Susan calling from Oregon. And do yourself a favor. Go and have a look at Vernon's report, Vernon Haltom's report, on Judy's funeral. It is right there at headonradionetwork.com. Should be on the post rotator. Just let it roll through. You'll see it. You'll see it. Beautiful photo of Coal River Mountain. Let's keep things rolling along. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening.
Hey, Jim, what's up?
Well, an awful lot. First, my condolences on the loss of your friend and fellow cohort, Judy.
Well, thank you.
And she will be sadly missed.
Indeed, she will.
You know, I don't understand why in the world these people had to get up there and read the Constitution the way they did. I mean, I think it's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard in my life. I just don't understand it.
Well, I mean, I think you do, Jim.
Not really.
It's showboating. It's grandstanding. It's,
what it reminds me of is this. When I thought about this and I saw it, I could see Hermann Göring as president of the Reichstag clapping as Adolf Hitler made his speech to Roosevelt in 1939, when Roosevelt had telegraphed him, which nations will you not attack? And Hitler, with solemn mien, slowly read every nation that he had no intention of attacking, but slyly omitted Poland.
And in this instance, they are omitting, but not really, things like Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, because they want it all.
Well, I mean, basically, I mean, that was the most masterful speech that Hitler ever gave. I mean, he had the whole world rocking with laughter. Well, not the whole world, but certainly his audience. But, I mean, what I'm trying to drive at is... you've got a Congress up there that's almost like the Reichstag that Hitler was addressing in April, I think it was April 23rd of 1939.
They're a frightening bunch, Jim.
I think it's a frightening bunch. And as far as the beginnings of World War II are concerned, World War II didn't start in Europe. It started in Asia when Japan invaded Manchuria. That's when it really started.
No, that's when the shooting war started, yeah.
Well, that's basically the foundations of the Second World War.
But I think what Susan was alluding to was the fact that the groundwork of dissatisfaction and the ability to whip a people into a furious frenzy arose out of the brutalities of the reparations in the Versailles Treaty.
Well, exactly. All 448 articles, I think it was 448, and Hitler had sworn to repudiate them. And during the salad days of the Third Reich, of course, he had his massive rallies at Nuremberg at Zeppelin Field.
Isn't it interesting how he swore he would repudiate the Treaty of Versailles, and this Congress was brought in on an oath to repudiate something as relatively, well, no, not simple, not prosaic, but the profit-driven health care bill?
Well, yes, there is a connection between that. And, of course, the articles of the Treaty of Versailles were extremely unfair and very repugnant to me, because what they did was sow the seeds of another war. I mean, even the people who were there, like Maynard Keynes and others, were walking the streets of Paris saying, you know, my God, in 20 years we're going to have this whole thing all over again. And when these people get up there and they repudiate this, that, and the other, and they read the Constitution and attach constitutionality to everything and everything, I mean, what does that tell you? It tells me that they're going to repudiate everything they possibly can and undo everything they possibly can. And
But part of the problem is that they were swept into power on this promise that they were going to cut $100 billion from the budget. Remember?
I think these people who supported them are going to be very sadly mistaken when they realize what these people do, what they try to do.
Well, but remember, Jim, they don't have to get it done. All they have to do is put it out there and make a big show for the oatmeal dribblers watching Fox News and say, well, we tried to take our country back, but there's too many of them liberals. You're going to have to get us the Senate and get rid of that Kenyan fascist, Lamunist Muslim, and then we can really take our country back.
Well, what they plan to do, have a reincarnation of Leni Riefenstahl, do a couple films to promote their positions.
What do you think campaign advertising in the 21st century is? I mean, I'm not being flip.
It's not nearly as good as what she did.
No, but by the same token, the American electorate doesn't have the attention span, frankly, that the Germans did. Remember, we are information saturated, information overloaded, and we can only take stuff 30 to 60 seconds at a time.
I don't know about that.
So what they're going to do? Well, it's like when Obama capitulated on the tax cuts for the rich. He said, you know, I'm going to campaign on this in 2012, and I'm anxious to. Well, I'm not. Because I know how Republicans message, and I know that they control the airwaves, just about every last bit of the airwaves. And I know that their fax machines will be absolutely burning up overnight. Well, not even fax machines anymore, just their internet connections to CNN and ABC and CBS. And what blows me away is that I don't think Barack Obama understands he's already sitting there in check, and they're gonna go to mate whenever they decide they want to.
Well, yes, of course.
Did you hear that quote from him, Jim, where he said, "Well, they'll appeal to their base for a while, but I think sooner or later they're going to have to realize that they're going to have to govern, and I look forward to sitting down and negotiating with them."
Yeah, I know. Famous last words, right? I mean, the whole thing with this campaign in November was almost like akin to you know, Hitler's campaign over Germany, when he was flying everywhere, getting the word out. And that's one thing the Nazis had a definite ability to do, and that was to get the word out and message. And I'm sure these Republicans are certainly using the methods that were used by the Nazis when they were getting the word out, when Hitler was flying, making three or four speeches in one day, either flying or with a special train or six-wheel Mercedes or whatever the hell he was driving or riding in. But, I mean, basically, I think they've used that as a model. And it's just and the word is propaganda.
Yes.
And that's exactly what it is. I mean, that's what our, I think that's what it should be called, their ministry of propaganda, because it's very much like Joseph Goebbels and the very tactics he used. And notice these people are very simplistic.
Oh, yeah. Take our country back.
They repeat the same mantra, the same thing. And that's what Hitler said. Number one, keep repeating it. Don't bother to ramify or explain. You don't have to, because you can appeal to the baser elements of humanity. And also the propagation of the big lie. Don't tell little lies, because people, tell little lies, and they get caught in them. Don't tell those white lies. Tell a great big black lie, a lie so tremendous that no one will ever question its veracity.
Because nobody in their right mind would tell something that big if it wasn't true.
That was axiomatic with the Goebbels propaganda ministry and Hitler's consent. I mean, that's exactly between the Reichstag of the early 30s after 1933 and this business in Congress today, this dog and pony show. It was just absolutely insulting and ridiculous to me.
It should be.
Performance for some of the people who were elected, because I'm sure half the people who were elected have never even read the damn Constitution, to tell you the truth, or understand strict constructionists versus loose constructionists and things of that nature.
Oh, I mean, to hear Tennessee Representative Diane Black, to hear that hateful woman come up and read, you could tell she didn't have the first idea of the meaning of the word she was reading.
That's what I'm saying. It's just a dog and pony show, and these people basically don't even understand what they're reading, and they can't understand the implications. It's constantly a deadline document. It was meant to be one that would grow and to be able to govern a nation that would grow and grow into the times to come, 200 years hence, and be flexible. And to allow for change and to deal with the necessities of change and the problems that change created, or the problems that lack of change created.
And there's going to, well, it's like that clip I ran of Judy. There's going to be a day that...
Now, what do you mean by that? I'm sorry.
Well, it's not politics in a vacuum. This stuff comes with consequences.
Now, I missed something here. Now, what do you...
Okay, maybe I misunderstood you. Let's go back to that.
Okay. You first.
No, I mean, repeat yourself, please. That last point.
You mean in reference to the Constitution's ability to change?
Yes. Yes.
Deal with change?
Yeah. And what I'm saying in regard to that, Jim, is that there is a price to be paid by a people, and it is a brutal price to be paid by people who think that it's just some sort of magic Tinkerbell document that, okay, well, we read it and now they understand it, and so therefore we know that everything that this Congress does is going to be constitutional.
Well, I mean, what did they do with the 14th Amendment? Did they delete the due process of law clause?
No, they read it. They read it. What they left out was Article 1, Section 2, Paragraph 3 about the 3/5 of a human being business. Didn't read what? That. Just blew right by it. Didn't exist.
Wasn't that, didn't that three-fifths business come from what they call the Missouri Compromise or something like that?
No, the Missouri Compromise is later. This is the North-South Compromise at the Constitutional Convention in 1787, where they agreed that for purposes of apportioning the House of Representatives, because there were so many slaves in the slave states, that they would only count slaves as three-fifths of a human being for purposes of determining representation in the House.
Well, that came up again in another compromise later, I believe. They used that.
Well, the Missouri Compromise becomes a problem later. Yeah, just prior to the Civil War, it was hammered out, I guess, by what, Calhoun, Webster, and Clay?
Right.
And it was, you know, we will bring in one slave state for every free state.
Okay.
And that precipitates Bloody Kansas.
With Quantrell and company.
And John Brown.
Yeah. John Brown. My Lord. Harper's Ferry.
Yeah. But you know, this idea, what I was getting at is this idea that, you know, oh, well, they read the Constitution. You know, because the teabaggers and the birthers and the deathers and the tenthers and the booger eaters and the helmet wearers and the oatmeal dribblers, all of these right wingers, they're children, Jim.
Well, they don't know how to govern. They don't know anything about the government and its mechanisms, and they are basically know as much about those subjects as a baby would about celestial mechanics.
Bingo! They are children. Santa Claus wouldn't ever really bring us coal and switches. I mean, they have a Santa Claus, Tinkerbell, Easter Bunny approach to governance. As long as the Republicans say, "Oh, we're going to cut the budget and take our country back," well, then they just sit back and chew their toenails some more.
I don't think of them as children, Bob. I think of them as the generation of vipers.
Well, there's that aspect of it. There is that aspect of it. But when it comes to the blind trust that they put into these right wing, and I'll say it, fascist freaks. Then it really is almost New Testament. It is the faith of a little child. And you know what? The one place in the world you don't want faith is in your government. Government is something, at least as I understand Mr. Jefferson, that must be constantly, and Franklin and Madison and a lot of them, government is something that must be constantly watched. But now that we've read the Constitution, the teabaggers can just go off and go back to their teabagging parties and talking about the Kenyan fascist Lamanist Muslim that they're going to get rid of in 2 years.
Well.
And they will cry, "Lord, Lord," when their Social Security gets cut off. And they will cry, "Lord, Lord," when their Medicaid goes away. And they will cry, "Lord, Lord," when their Medicare goes away and their pensions die out and Wall Street goes in the crapper again. And they'll look around and they'll say, "Why did this happen, Jim?" And we'll tell them, "You're why this happened." And they'll say, "No, it was the liberals. Bill O'Reilly and Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and Glenn Beck done told me so."
Well, hard times and economic cutbacks and things like that can certainly get people's attention and turn their attentions to what's caused them. And I would hope that the American people are not that stupid to realize what these people are doing. That's just my hopeful aspiration.
Well, but to be truthful, we're talking about 20% of the American electorate. We're not talking about the American people. But that 20% of the American electorate is enough to shove things around because they've been allowed to, because they have the full cooperation of the for-profit media. And that may be just a little bit too nuanced, and I'm not being a smartass, but it really is a toxic brew. Stupid people, stupid media, stupid result.
And the stupid ones are the ones who go to the polls and vote because they're galvanized to do so, correct?
Right. They're going to go save the little fetuses. Or they're going to take their country back. Or, you know, whatever you can fit on a right-wing bumper sticker.
But what are they going to take their country back from?
The Negroes and the brown people and the liberals and the women's and the gay people and the Muslims. And the atheists. Don't forget the atheists. Because that's what they've been told, Jim. Everything wrong with America can be cited. I mean, it's a straight line for them. If we'd all just get back to God.
Well.
You know, that's what Cassie was talking about. She knew right-wingers in Texas, that they were fundamentalist right-wingers, and they were just insane. She goes up to Princeton, and now she's met some rich right-wingers. And they talk crazy crap, too, but, you know, they do it with their teeth clenched, and they know which fork to use with the shrimp.
And, of course, they have their sweaters tied over their shoulders like they do at the Hamptons, right?
It's Gatsby from one end to the other, Jim.
Well, you know, I'm going to say this. Not all Christians feel the way these people do. Not all Christians.
No, and in fact, I'll take you a step further. These fundamentalists aren't Christians.
No, not their concepts and not their compassion for their fellow man. It certainly is a Christian.
No, I wish I had it in front of me. It's worth looking for. There's a quote from Stephen Colbert, you know, said in his typical tongue-in-cheek style in the last couple of weeks. And to paraphrase, it goes something like, we're either going to have to admit that Jesus wants us to take care of the poor. No. Well, it's worth looking up. Somebody will email it to me, and I'll read it here in a minute. Because it is the very essence of the Republican flogging of Christ.
Well, exactly. Pharisaical, and, you know, members of the Sanhedrin, that type of thing. And, you know, the persecution and murder of an innocent human being who only taught good things. But, you know, going back to your earlier things about the rewriting of books and things of that nature, that's very scary, too.
It's nasty.
Yeah. I just wonder how they're going to clean up the Canterbury Tales.
Well, they're not going to, because nobody's reading them.
Well.
But I think Cassie is right. On the front end, this is about making money for Professor Gribben.
Yeah, it's all money-driven.
But the other side of it is also, I am convinced, not so much worrying about the people whose feelings are hurt by the use of that word, but the fear that the teabaggers can't be trusted to just bring it back into the normal argot of everyday speech.
Which, Bob, that word's never left the argot of the English language, I'm afraid. I'm sorry, but it hasn't. As well have other epithets like spick and dago, wop, queer, faggot, all those other horrible epithets that are designed to demean human beings and make them feel less worthy than they should be. And I'll end this by saying, and Absalom was ready with his iron hot and Nicholas right in the ass he got, because that's exactly what these people are going to get before it's over with, and that's straight from Chaucer.
It is indeed. Thank you, Jim.
Good night.
Take care. Bye now. You are never going to find yourself wanting for the ability to say, "Hey, I picked up something new on Bob's show," when you hear from Jim. About 6 minutes before the hour. Let's see who this is. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey.
Hey, Juanita. Hey, what's up?
Well, you know what the difference is in if one of us has got up and said something in Congress, you know what the difference between us and that lady?
What?
That said, not Obama.
You mean one of us would be on the way to Guantanamo, whereas she's being heralded as a new Joe the Plumber in the right wing?
Yeah. Whatever.
Well, I remember when the Capitol Police broke a man's leg for trying to disrupt a meeting of the House. Because he was liberal and dark-skinned.
Well, there you go, see. And you remember when Sandy Sheehan was going to go in and listen to the...
I think that was that same event.
Well, that time, I don't think they arrested her, but she couldn't stay. They escorted her right out. She was sitting down waiting to listen. And so, you know, and that's the thing, you know, when they don't let you speak up, then they think that you're silent. They think you're silent, but they don't let you be heard, you know.
Well, you know, just look, Juanita.
Whatever.
This vote they're going to take on rolling back the Affordable Care Act. You know what the name? Have you seen what the name of that bill is?
I think you said something last night, and I know it's really wild. You
want repealing the Job Killing Health Care Law Act. I think that's the first piece of legislation the Republicans have introduced in the last 10 years that doesn't spell something. Because that's the... Well, hey, look, it's Klingon, Juanita. It's the...
Really, you know. And I quit watching it after a while. It was. I hate to say this, but it was boring.
It was dull as dishwater.
I mean, why'd they have so many people reading it? I don't know. And I couldn't figure out... What the difference? Oh, did you remember when I think it was Udall was asking about why they weren't going to read all of it, and it was congressman did that was booing him. Remember?
Oh,
that was not up in the peanut gallery. That was the new Congress people. Am I not right?
I believe you are.
So.
Yeah, a little disturbing, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, we've done had our inauguration down here, and which I didn't listen to, but
can't blame you.
I see where Jeb had a big part in it.
Well, see, that's the thing where I said I may have to draw in my horns, Juanita. Because somebody asked me, he said, absolutely, I am absolutely not going to run in 2012. Absolutely not. Well, what about 2016? Well, I never say never. But see, that's the thing. That's what makes me kind of... Because, again, in 2016, Jebby's going to be 63. Which means if he was to lose, he would have to run in 2020 when he would be... coming up on 68, and at that point you're approaching Reaganville.
And you know, he's not, if people think he's like his brother, I know they're related and that way they're alike, but he's got a tone, different tone about him.
Oh yes, he does, and frankly, W and Neil are more like each other.
I've never heard Neil speak.
Well, that's the whole point. He's there's melting ice that has a higher IQ than Neil Bush.
But have you noticed Jeb's sons are not in the forefront?
Oh no, and I don't know. They may have shipped poor little cokehead Noel off to an island somewhere.
I wonder. Yeah.
But I did notice that your governor, the fraud merchant Rick Scott, got right out of the blocks and got to work. Did you catch that?
Well, what about?
I got an email earlier today from Peter Godbold, because he kind of keeps an eye on this stuff.
Oh yeah.
And
Peter.
Yeah, Florida Governor Rick Scott, the teabagging founder and former CEO of a hospital group found guilty in the hugest Medicare scam in history, began his tenure today by issuing an executive order limiting Florida's non-discrimination law to cases involving race, gender, creed, color, and national origin. There's only one problem with that. Florida's statute has a broader reach than what Rick Scott said in his executive order, which means that he is in actual contravention of stated law in the state of Florida. Now, if he was a Democrat, there would be a move on. Well, he wouldn't have done that if he was a Democrat, but if he was a Democrat, there'd have been a move on by now to impeach him.
Well, as Dick Cheney would say, so. There was a reporter, a woman reporter said that she had gone with him on some trips, you know, when he was in office,
mm-hmm.
and said you could tell that he didn't really want any of them there, you know, but said one time that he was just sitting there and she just decided to say something to him, and she said to him, Mr. Vice President, did you know a lot of Americans think that this war is not worth fighting?
So?
And he just looked, all he said was so.
Yeah. Well, what happened in Florida was, Florida actually has a Civil Rights Act, Juanita. And it includes not only race, gender, creed, color, and national origin, but it also includes, handicap or marital status. So the executive order that he filed actually shrinks the past stated, settled law of the state of Florida. He removed handicapped people, and he removed marital status.
Yeah.
You know, I thought, you got a real life 4-year party on your hands, Juanita. And I mean, my condolences.
Oh, thank you. Well, you know what it's like.
And you got your 19% tax cut coming?
I don't know, figure that one out. I don't know, Bob. Well, you know, he hired a couple of guys from out of state to run the prisons down here.
Yeah, I read that. That'll be fun. They'll cut the daily prison cheese allotment and claim that they're saving money for the people of the state of Florida.
And then they're putting the mental hospitals we have under private ownership.
Privatization, yeah.
Yeah, privatization. And I do know that, but honest to God, I haven't been keeping up with a lot of it. I didn't want to watch that inauguration.
Can't blame you.
I didn't. But anyway, that's Chevy's back in town.
Guard, well, if it's movable, chain it to the ground and watch your wallet. There's never been a family, a bigger group of thieves in this country, and I include the James family.
Yeah, oh, sure.
Than the Bushes.
Sure. And without qualms, they've got no qualms. I know that Jeff hasn't always got his way. So who knows what's going to happen.
If nothing else, it will be fun to watch.
Yeah, I guess. I thought today was going to be fun to watch that, or yesterday. I was gone a lot yesterday, but I didn't know that I hadn't read the Constitution till today. And you know that it was kind of like, well, this is the revised version, you know. What do you think?
Yeah, like I said, the version without the budgies.
Yeah. But they've already, I don't understand it, but they've already gotten us more in debt just by showing up, I guess. And if they do away with the, what did you call it? His job killing?
Oh, right. The job killing, the whole thing is the repealing the job killing health care law act. Which I think is Klingon for Republican.
Now I wonder what these people that, you know, that were in those, picketing signs, you know, up and going up to Washington and all and say, don't mess with my Medicare. Don't mess with my Social Security. Don't mess. I just wonder if they realize what they've done.
Well, we're going to find out.
Yeah, I guess so.
But remember what I told Jim, Juanita. When these simpletons get their Medicare and their Social Security cut, and the Republicans do it to them, they will have already been primed to say that the liberals done it with their little hatchet.
That's right. You're right. But I hope, you know, it took a long time. I'm sure you don't remember, but I don't know if you were, I guess you were born then when Watergate.
Oh, yeah, I was a kid, but I was watching.
Yeah.
Political junkie at an early age.
It took a long time for most people to see what was going on. Actually, during the election, when he ran, him and, what's his name? What was his name?
McGovern?
That he beat. Yeah, McGovern.